Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week, as the Hoosier Ag Today news team brings you the top news stories from this past week impacting Indiana's farmers and the state's most important industry, agriculture. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and coming up on the show, harvest is nearly halfway completed across the state. You'll hear about harvest conditions across northern Indiana. Also, a legal victory for the livestock and poultry industries. Josh Trinari with Indiana Pork will join us to talk about a lawsuit that was tossed out recently that would have made things far more challenging for Indiana's pork producers. Brian Basting with Advanced Trading will join us this segment as he reviews the USDA's WASDE report that came out Friday afternoon. And you'll hear the story of an Orange County farmer who was recently harvesting soybeans when his combine quickly caught fire and was completely engulfed in flames. Not to mention his four-year-old daughter was also riding in the cab with him when it happened. Both he and his daughter made it out safely, but you'll hear about how it all went down a little later in the show. But first, there are some changes to that wide-open harvest window that we've been talking about recently, at least for the northern part of the state. Eric Pfeiffer joins us now with more.
Yeah, thanks, CJ. Ryan Martin, Seed Genetics Direct. Harvest weather forecast has Canadian cold air moving in this weekend, and with it, the chance of some moisture. He says the threat isn't huge, maybe some hit-and-miss scattered showers, particularly in northeast Indiana.
And then we transition into just some spit and sprinkle activity later Sunday through Monday and into early Tuesday. Most of the spit and sprinkle action is due to stronger cold air flow across very warm Great Lakes regions. In northeast Indiana, I'm going to say watch for anywhere from a few hundreds to a few tenths, and that could spread about over 30% of the northern part of the state. That's all. The rest of us are going to stay dry.
Now, the other part of that equation is the cold air.
We are looking at frost and freeze conditions on three separate periods. Overnight Sunday night, Monday morning, Monday night, Tuesday morning, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. So that's where we can see frost and freeze statewide. The cold air dives all the way down through the Ohio Valley.
Martin's forecast does call for a significant warm-up late next week, Thursday through Saturday.
We're putting together a dry period there as well. I don't see any significant rain until we get into early parts of the week of the 21st. So I think that we're going to be seeing dry windows of opportunity. Good for running corn here. Beans, it should be done soon anyway. The cool temperatures for next week early on may slow the drying right out of the gate in the morning, but we're still looking at a pretty nice setup for harvest, all things considered.
Seed Genetics Direct harvest weather forecast details can be in your inbox each Saturday morning. Just sign up to receive the Hoosier Ag Today e-newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
An event hosted this past week at the White House focusing on ag producers has been slammed by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Sabrina Halverson reports.
Definitely a different event than what was advertised, I think, to those that were invited a few weeks back.
Ethan Lane, Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, says the event was a missed opportunity to address the real concerns of cattle producers. The White House event, which was intended to highlight the Biden administration's support for farmers and ranchers, did not include the NCBA, though some smaller chapters had been invited. According to Lane, many of the attendees represented more niche interests with a slant toward organizations supportive of government intervention in cattle markets.
Very much with a bent towards groups like Farm Action, which the Animal Ag Alliance in the last year has identified as an animal activist extremist group, rather than the ag group that they would like to portray themselves as.
One topic that Lane says he would have addressed with the White House is cattle pricing.
The cattle industry is a big, diverse industry. There are a lot of viewpoints. We have a lot of state affiliates with very different policies. Nothing is ever clean when it comes to cattle markets and how we price cattle and all that kind of stuff. Whenever you see an administration coming in claiming to fix the cattle market or in any other way insert themselves into the free market at the request of a very small group of producers to the detriment of the majority of producers out there, and doing so in a very blatant way, it is off-putting. It's disrespectful to hundreds of thousands of cattle producers across the country who have built their businesses resources around making premiums for investments they have made in higher and higher quality cattle.
Lane says the event failed to address the real challenges that cattle producers face, though he does acknowledge the administration's efforts in response to devastating hurricanes that have left many producers in extremely challenging positions. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
Well, if it feels like you're seeing more blue corduroy jackets being worn by young students these days, you're right. The National FFA organization is celebrating a milestone this year, as they've now reached over 1 million members.
We think that our FFA members across the country and our students realize how important ag is and that it's around them every day, right? From the food we eat to the clothes we wear, the fuel we put in our car.
And that's Christy Meyer, communications manager with the National FFA, on why they believe they've hit the 1 million mark.
But we also see that our students are realizing there's an opportunity for a lot of careers in agriculture. So as they're taking their high school classes, they're really looking into what their future might hold in a role in agriculture.
Meyer says that hitting 1 million members is a reason to be happy and excited, but no reason to rest on their laurels.
I also think it's really imperative that we reach all those students who are taking those agriculture education classes and really let them know that along with that ag ed class is the opportunity to become a member of FFA and really explore agriculture a little more. I don't think we're done by any stretch of the imagination. I think we have leaps and bounds to go.
And it's hard to believe the 97th National FFA Convention and Expo is right around the corner. It kicks off on October 23rd, runs through the 26th in downtown Indianapolis. And of course, Hoosier Ag Today will be there throughout the convention and expo to bring you all of the action. It's time now for Hoosier Ag Today's Farm Market Review. And for that, here's Andy Eubank.
Thank you, CJ. It was a sell-off on Friday in the corn, soybean, and wheat markets. Also, the October USDA report came at noon Eastern time. Right near the end of trade, I checked with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading to get his analysis on the report and on the session. Brian, late in trade, the markets are lower, and in the case of soybeans on Friday, a higher move went backwards after the USDA report at 12 noon Eastern time. Let's talk about that report, any impact that it might have had on the markets in your view, and let's start with soybeans.
Well, thanks for having me as always, Andy. And really, their report as a standalone item was kind of a non-event. They left the soybean carry out for this 24-25 crop year unchanged from what it was in September. They made some small tweaks. The yield for the U.S. crop was down a tenth of a bushel from last month, but they tweak usage just to add here and there, but really no major changes in exports, crush, crop size for that matter. And so we're kind of back to where we were 2 days ago, and that is looking at rapid harvest progress here with near record or record yields. I did notice, Andy, in the report here, looking at the state-by-state breakdown, which the USDA provides us, of course, each month, that the USDA did lower the soybean yield in Indiana down to 60 bushel an acre. I believe it was 63 last month. That's still a strong number, but it is down from last month. Michigan is still at a record, but they did lower Ohio, so maybe a little bit of a dry finish to the growing season. Took that down just a tad from what it was, again, back in September. But I think we're looking at now just some harvest pace. Will a farmer continue to sell across the scales, Andy? We've seen a fair amount of that. So we may be seeing some hedge pressure to wrap up the week here. Not a tremendous amount, but a little bit there. And then we're going to switch our focus, I think, pretty quickly here to South America when they're just getting the soybean planting season started down in Brazil.
Brian Basting, Market Analysis. Brian is with Advanced Trading. His number is 309-664-2314. More numbers now. The settlements from Friday's trading session down 2.75 in the end on Dease Corn, 415.75. March 433 down 3.25. And May down 3.25, 441.75. Novi Beans, 9.25 down, 10.05.5. Jan contract loses a dime and a half, 10.21. Almost a nickel lower in wheat. December 599. That was down 4.75. The meat markets ended mixed. December live cattle, 70 cents lower, 187.57. And December lean hogs, 70 cents higher, 77.65. You're up to date now with the markets on the weekend show. Much more still to come. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
It's like fertilizer for your brain. Every weekday morning, the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter arrives in your inbox with the latest farm news, markets, and weather information, the kind of stuff you're going to need that day. So make sure you're feeding your brain with this free, easy-to-read, and important input. Sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Finally seeing some pattern changes in our weather update. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. We've been so warm and so dry for so long, we actually have gotten a little bit accustomed to weather that's not quite right for this time of year. This weekend's going to try and serve as a wake-up call that we do still live in Indiana, not the Gulf Coast areas or someplace significantly warmer. The cold air moving out of Canada this weekend is going to create a little precipitation first and then definitely a chilly start to next week. Let's kind of talk it through here. As we move through the near term, your Saturday seeing clouds increase, especially midday and afternoon, and that's going to lead to, I think, a little bit of moisture late afternoon, evening, and overnight in northern tier counties of Indiana. This is more a story in southern lower Michigan and northwest Ohio, but I do think we see a little bit here from US 24 northward. Rain totals can be anywhere from a few hundreds to a tenth or two, all the way up to, if we can get a thunderstorm to fire off, it could be half to three quarters of an inch. So just really depends on where you're at, but this is mostly northern parts of the state. And this is a precursor as cold air continues to move across the upper Midwest and Great Lakes overnight tonight into tomorrow. It's a precursor to moisture that may try and get back into Indiana for tomorrow midday afternoon. Most of tomorrow's moisture, at least the big stuff, is going to be situated a little bit farther north in Michigan. The cold air dives down in to start next week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we are looking at a nice chill in the air. Frost and freeze conditions easily in here in the overnight early morning time frame. So what we're talking is tomorrow night into Monday morning, Monday night, Tuesday morning, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. That's where we are. Our frosts and freezes will be at. We see strong north winds, especially Monday into early Tuesday, coming down the fetch of Lake Michigan. So that's going to create lake effect cloud cover and probably some spits and sprinkles. Most of the state, though, is going to be precipitation free, just chilly, which means harvest should be able to roll on. Maybe not in the same kind of scenario or conditions that we have seen the past few weeks, but harvest is still possible. Then once we get through Wednesday, late afternoon, evening, we're going to start to see south flow come on the backside of Canadian high pressure. That warms us for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think we're back to above normal temperatures. Very good drying. Harvest continues to roll on very easily. Strong frontal boundary trying to come through the Great Plains late next week into the weekend. But as it moves toward the Mississippi River Valley, it dies out. I still think we have a chance for some rain probably next Sunday, the 20th, but it's going to be very, very light. A few hundreds to a few tenths, that is all. Coverage may be only 60%. So while we have some moisture in the forecast here over the next 10 days, it's very spotty, and I'd say southern Indiana has the best chance of missing out on it completely of anyone. I'm Ryan Martin.
When it comes to buying seed, you can have your cake and eat it too when you order from Seed Genetics Direct. Finance your 2025 seed order through SGD Financing and receive a 2% discount off your purchase. Plus, pay 0% interest through January 2026. 2% off the top plus 0% financing from the fastest growing independent seed company in the Eastern Corn Belt? Now that's a slice of cake no grower can turn down. Seed Genetics Direct. Value, knowledge, performance, it's in their genetics.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and harvest is coming along at a rapid rate. Andy Eubank joins us once again with an update.
Thanks, CJ. In Indiana, the most recent progress update has 29% of the corn acres harvested and 36% of soybeans completed. Both numbers exceed the five-year averages. In a Channel Seeds harvest update, Kate Gorski, field sales representative for Channel in Northwest Indiana, says there has been even more progress in the days since the Monday USDA update.
Soybeans are up to about 45 to 50% in Northwest Indiana. The past 10 days have been excellent conditions for running, and we didn't get much of the rain from the last hurricane, so we were definitely not out of the fields longer like some of the other folks in northern Indiana. Corn is around 30%, I would say, in the area too. Some guys are getting done with soybean harvest and switching over to corn pretty quickly.
Every year, yield is dependent on planting dates and conditions and rainfall throughout the season. Variable conditions this year have led to varying harvest results.
We didn't have great planting conditions, and that shows in some of the crop. Corn is definitely starting to show a really good top end and then gets into the variables depending on that rainfall in the area that you're located. Same with soybeans. Good top end yields and pleased with the crop that's coming out with the limited rainfall that's in August and September that was going to be able to finish that grain fill out.
Gorski confirms this 2024 crop in Northwest Indiana has dried quickly.
A lot of things are way more dry than you ever would expect. A lot of guys have been getting into some beans that are 9%. Corn is also, depending on where you're located, if you sprayed fungicide, if you have tar spot, corn is definitely drier than many of the years past.
Hear more in the Full Hat and Channel Seeds growing season update at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Andy Eubank.
USDA is working to help farmers impacted by Hurricanes Helene and Milton across Florida and the southeastern U.S. Sabrina Halverson has more.
It's just been heartbreaking.
U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack spoke with me about the USDA's efforts.
I was with the president in Florida and Georgia talking to those who have lost their homes and farms. Very, very difficult time.
For farmers, ranchers, and other producers, the focus is on getting disaster assistance processed as quickly as possible.
We have what are called surge teams. These are additional people that come in from a state that's not been impacted by the storms to help supplement staff in these offices. We also are moving people in the state that are coming from counties that weren't impacted by the storm. So it's a combination of out-of-state and in-state folks basically going to where the need is.
Secretary Vilsack acknowledged the significant challenges facing agricultural communities.
Over 8,000 federal employees that are currently working on this disaster assistance effort right now in a variety of ways.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
A legal victory for both the pork and beef industries after more than a dozen environmental activist groups had challenged the EPA to put tighter regulations on large livestock farms when it comes to the disposal of animal waste.
This case was one of those interesting situations where the industry groups agreed with the EPA that, yeah, we don't need to open up this rule again, and EPA got a win today, and we're glad. So it's an odd situation to be in, but there it is.
And that's Josh Trenary, Executive Director of Indiana Pork. Back in 2017, those activist groups petitioned the EPA to change its rules on how concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs for short, get rid of their manure. Those activists claim that the manure from many hog and cattle farms are finding their ways into our waterways.
EPA had initially denied those, but they didn't take no action. I mean, they did agree to put together an advisory committee to look at the issue and to consider what revisions might make sense for effluent limitation guidelines for CAFOs. So they were doing the full-on review that the activist groups wanted, but they were doing something. And so, you know, that committee process is ongoing, and we're certainly in favor of that type of review too, but the activist groups weren't.
Last year, the groups decided to sue the EPA. However, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco last week ruled against the activist and said the EPA did the right thing by setting up an advisory committee first to take its time and study the issue before changing its regulations. Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, helping to feed those in need is the goal of a nonprofit organization and its farm called the Teeter Retreat, an organic farm near Noblesville in Hamilton County.
This year, we will donate 50,000 servings to the Hamilton County Harvest Food Bank and area meal programs and families in need. And we are targeting 100,000 donations a year.
And that's Katie Rogers, director of Teeter Retreat, an organic farm. She says the 117-acre farm has a very unique story.
Teeter was given to Noblesville First United Methodist Church by Ruth Teeter in 1981. In 2016, after developing out a retreat center, one of the pastors at the church went to the Pacific Northwest on a trip, and he went to some not-for-profit farms that were growing food to feed the hungry in their community, came back inspired and got people on board, and they decided to start an organic farm that would donate food to the Hamilton County Harvest Food Bank and take care of our neighbors.
She says the main goal of the farm is to produce organically grown vegetables, fruits, eggs, and honey to help feed more than 32,000 food insecure people in Hamilton County. All of the food that is planted and harvested is done through the help of more than 100 volunteers. She hopes the story of Ruth Teeter's generous gift serves as an inspiration to others.
Not-for-profits and churches and large landholders often can use just a small portion of what they have to have a significant impact in their community. And I want to encourage people to investigate that and to consider maybe part of your legacy is tithing part of your land into a land trust or to new farmers or to an organization that's going to do something to have a legacy impact in your community.
Read more about Teeter Retreat and Organic Farm at HoosierAgToday.com. Coming up, you'll hear from Orange County farmer C.J. Fleener, whose quick thinking and action saved both his life and his daughter's life during a combine fire. I'm C.J. Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
The Midwest has to lead on sustainable aviation fuel for the factors, you know, the reasons you mentioned, right? So we've got clearly world-class farmers and agriculture community that have just shown the ability year in, year out to innovate and to raise yields. And so the building blocks, the feedstock sources are here. You have the ethanol community that is centered in Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, within the Corn Belt. But you also have proximity to the largest airline hubs in the world. You know, these airports that sit either in or on the periphery of the Midwest. And this is a good place to do business with universities and a business community that have shown the ability to rise to that challenge. And so we're excited, but we also need the Midwest to lead in this space.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm C.J. Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. Orange flames and black smoke filled the air over Orange County as a combine in southern Indiana recently caught fire during harvest. To make matters worse, the farmer who was behind the wheel shortly before that combine was completely engulfed in flames had his four-year-old daughter riding in the cab with him. Joining us here today on Hoosier Ag Today is C.J. Fleener. He's the farmer whose quick thinking saved both his life and his daughter's life. C.J., what happened just before you and your daughter escaped the combine fire?
Just over 2 weeks ago, actually, I was making my way across the field and smelled something that smelled different. However, it was not smoke. It actually was a sweet smell. And I did have my four-year-old daughter with me and didn't think anything of it. In fact, I looked at her and said, "Caroline, did you just open a snack?" I thought maybe she had opened something to eat. And she said no. And so we kept going, and the smell was still there lingering in the air. We were near the end of the row at that point, so I went ahead and told her calmly to put her shoes on. And I thought, well, you know, we're probably going to need to make a stop here and check things out. So we were cutting beans, and as we stopped at the end of the pass, I picked the head up and turned the corner to get away from the standing crop to stop, and I heard a thunk, and I thought it was her hitting her heel underneath the buddy seat and realized it was not her. And that was when I instantly thought, hey, we've probably got a problem, because that thunk was probably an idler pulley or the spring from an idler pulley that had just released. Sometimes you kind of have intuition, and my intuition was, I think we may have a fire. So I stopped, got her out of the combine, you know, grabbed her backpack and her iPad and moved her over off to the side and looked around the back of the combine as we were climbing down the ladder and saw a little bit of smoke. It didn't look very bad. Didn't think anything of it. Grabbed the fire extinguisher coming down the ladder. My dad, who helps me running the auger cart, he ran over and saw a little bit of smoke. We climbed up on the platform and put the fire out. There was some smoldering embers on top of the hydraulic pump. And then we saw smoke underneath the intake. I opened the side door, and at that point, the top of the fuel tank was already melted and the fuel tank was on fire. At that point, it became a rescue mission just to make sure everybody was safe. Like I say, my daughter was about 100 feet away at that time, and I ran over to her and moved her another 50 or 100 feet down the road and started calling the fire departments at the same time. And if you've never experienced something like it, then it's hard to describe. It feels like the whole experience is a 20 or 30 minute experience. But my brother, who him and I farmed together, he saw the smoke And he said from the time that he saw the first wisp of smoke to the time that it was fully engulfed, he timed it. It was roughly 2 or 2.5 minutes. So that experience felt like it was a 20 or 30 minute experience, but it literally was just 2.5 minutes is all you had to think about. Is everybody safe? Do I have everything out? Honestly, if we'd had our water truck there, which we usually do, and we did not that day, it wouldn't have done it any good. That combine was already gone at that point.
Well, CJ, do you know what may have caused your combine to become completely engulfed in flames in such a short amount of time?
We're not sure. Just to be completely honest with you, I mean, insurance and I discussed it. The fire was so hot, anything that was aluminum melted. The steps leading up to the combine cab, those melted. We really aren't sure where that fire generated. It appeared to have started, to me, somewhere under the air intake area, and this was a Case 7120 machine. So for anybody that's familiar with a Case combine, there's really nothing there. I mean, the fuel tank is underneath of it, but other than that, there's no moving parts. So I'm going to call it electrical, whether it was static or it was, a spark to come up from an alternator or an AC compressor or something. I had somebody tell me that sweet smell I smelled may have been burning copper. So I'm just going to assume that maybe it was something electrical and move on. I mean, I wish I knew, because I wish that way I would know what to look for in the future. But at this point, I can just say, hey, I'm glad everybody's safe. We're all sound. And just to continue doing my due diligence daily.
CJ, what message do you have for other farmers when it comes to operating a combine and you happen to smell something burning, or you see smoke, or you just get the sense that something isn't right?
The biggest thing I would say is just if you hear something, if you think you see something, if you smell something, don't be afraid to stop. You want to move ahead. You want to get those acres done. You know, you've got a goal for the day, but don't be afraid to take a couple minutes just to get out and double check something, because, you know, a couple minutes sooner may or may not made a difference, or a couple minutes later certainly would have made a difference on us making it out alive. You know, I'd heard of another fire that had happened in central Indiana, but that guy did push a little too long and he ended up escaping the combine with second and third degree burns. Rather than push on, you know, I could have kept pushing and said, oh, it's nothing. But if I'd have pushed on, you know, literally another minute or two, it would have been too late. That was the smart thing to do.
Well, once again, I'm glad that both you and your daughter are both doing fine, that your insurance company helped you get another combine, and that you're already back in the cab here during harvest season. Once again, CJ Fleener, farming in Orange County, thank you so much for sharing your story with us here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And you can check out those photos of his combine fire. Those are posted with the full story at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, that does it for this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of the show, feel free to download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, and Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.